सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। All right, so I'm going to share my screen. Are you able to see my screen?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, so we are doing 38 onwards, but then just to make sure that we continue from Arjuna Uvacha, I just thought we will just read from 36 and then we'll continue discussing from 38 onwards. अर्जुन उवाच स्थाने हृषीकेश तव प्रकीर्त्या जगत्प्रहृष्यत्यनुरज्यते च रक्षांसि भीतानि दिशोद्रवन्ति सर्वे नमस्यन्ति च सिद्धसङ्घाः। अर्जुन सेड् अर्जुन उवाच अर्जुन सेड् हृषीकेश O Lord, literally the inner controller of beings, Sthane, it is but proper that Jagat, the world, Prahrushyati, is delighted, Cha Anurajyate, and gratified, Prakirtya, by the glorification, Tava, of you, Bhitani Rakshamsi, the frightened demons, Dravanti, run, Dishaha, in all directions, Cha, and Sarve Siddha Sangaha, at all the hosts of Siddhas, Namasyanti, bow down to you. Arjuna said, O Lord, it is but proper that the world is delighted and gratified by the glorification of you. The frightened demons run in all directions and all the hosts of Siddhas bow down to you. Kasmachate na nameran mahatman gariyase brahmanopyadikatre अनंत देवेश जगन्निवास त्वमक्षरं सदसत्तत्परं यत्। महात्मन ओ ग्रेट लॉर्ड कस्मात् चते व्हाई वुड दे न नमे रन नॉट सल्यूट यू गरीयसे हु आर ग्रेटर अपि ब्रह्मणः देन इवन ब्रह्मा आदिकत्रे एंड हु आर द फर्स्ट क्रिएटर अनंत ओ लिमिटलेस वन देवेश हु इज रूलर ऑफ गॉड्स Jagannivasa and the abode of the universe. Asat Sat, you are the cause and the effect. Tvam Tad Aksharam, also you are that imperishable truth. Yat Param, which is beyond both the Sat and the Asat. O great Lord, why would they not salute you who are greater than even Brahma and who is the first creator? O limitless one, who is the ruler of the gods and the abode of the universe, you are the cause and the effect. Also, you are that imperishable truth which is beyond both. Tvamadi deva purusha puranam tvamastya vishvastya param nidhanam vetasi vetyam cha param cha dhama tvayatatam vishvam anantarupa. Tvam adi devaha, you are the primal god. Puranaha purushaha, the ancient purusha. Tvam Param Nidhanam, you are the supreme ground of dissolution. Asya Vishwasya, of this universe. Asi Vedta, you are the knower. Vedhyam Cha, the known. Cha Dhamma, as well as the abode. Param, which is beyond both. Vishwam Tatam, the universe is pervaded. Tvaya, by you. Ananta Rupa, O Lord within the endless forms. Oh, Lord with endless forms. You are the primal God. The ancient Purusha, you are the supreme ground of dissolution of this universe. You are the knower, the known, as well as the abode, which is beyond both. The universe is pervaded by you, O Lord, with endless forms. Vayur Yamogne Varuna Shashankaha Prajapatistvam Prapitamahascha Namo Namaste Stu Sahasra Krutvaha Punascha Bhuyopi Namo Namaste. Tvam Vayuhu, you are the Vayu, Yamaha, Yama, Agnihi, Agni, Varunaha, Varuna, Shashankaha, the moon, Prajapatihi, Prajapati, Cha Prapitamaha, and the great grandfather, सहस्र कृत्वः अ थाउजेंड फोल्ड नमः नमः सल्यूटेशन अस्तुते बी टू यू नमः नमः सल्यूटेशन बी ते टू यू पुनः च भूयः अपि अगेन एंड अगेन यू आर वायुः अग्निः यमः वरुणः शशांकः द मून प्रजापतिः एंड द ग्रेट ग्रैंडफादर अ थाउजेंड फोल्ड सल्यूटेशंस बी टू यू सल्यूटेशंस बी टू यू अगेन एंड अगेन नमः पुरस्तादथ पृष्ठतस्ते नमोऽस्तु ते सर्वत एव सर्व अनन्त वीर्यामित विक्रमस्त्वं सर्वं समाप्नोषि ततोऽसि सर्वः नमः पुरस्तात् सल्यूटेशन्स् टु यू इन् फ्रण्ट् अथ एण्ड् ते सल्यूटेशन्स् टु यू पृष्ठतः बिहैण्ड् नमः अस्तु ते बी टु यू सर्वतः एव आल् अराउण्ड् त्वं यू आर् ओ लार्ड् अनन्तवीर्यमितविक्रमः ऑफ लिमिटलेस पवर एंड इनफिनिट करेज समाप्नोषि यू पर्वे सर्वम एवरीथिंग ततः असि एंड हेंस यू आर सर्वः एवरीथिंग सल्यूटेशंस टू यू इन फ्रंट एंड सल्यूटेशंस टू यू बिहाइंड सल्यूटेशंस बी टू यू ऑल अराउंड ओ लॉर्ड यू आर ऑफ लिमिटलेस पवर एंड इनफिनिट करेज यू परवेड एवरीथिंग एंड हेंस यू आर एवरीथिंग सखेति मत्वा प्रसभम यदुक्तम हे कृष्ण हे यादव हे सखेति अजानता महिमानं तवेदं मया प्रमादात् प्रणयेन वापि अत्वा इति रिगार्डिंग यू इति सखा एज माय फ्रेंड इति यत् एक्सप्रेशंस लाइक हे कृष्ण हे यादव हे सखे ओ फ्रेंड प्रसभम हैव बीन रूडली प्रमादात् indifferently va api pranayena or affectionately uktam maya by me ajanata who did not know idam mahimanam this glory tava of yours regarding you as my friend expressions like o krishna o yadava o friend etc have been rudely indifferently or affectionately uttered by me who did not know this glory of yours yat chapahasartham satkrutosi विहारशय्यासन भोजनेषु एकोथवाप्यच्युत तत्समक्षं तत्क्षामये त्वामहमप्रमेयम् यत् च मोरव अवहासार्थं फॉर द सेक ऑफ फन असि असत्कृतः यू हैव बीन स्लाइटेड बाय मी विहारशय्या भोजनेषु वाइल प्लेइंग रिक्लाइनिंग सिटिंग और ईटिंग अथवा एकः either in privacy अपि तत् समक्षम or in public अच्युत ओ कृष्ण तत् for that अहम् क्षामये I seek forgiveness त्वाम् from you अप्रमेयम् the incomprehensible one moreover for the sake of fun you have been slighted by me while playing reclining sitting or eating either in privacy or in public ओ कृष्ण for that I seek forgiveness from you the incomprehensible one pita si lokasya characharasya tvamastya pujyasya gururgariyan natvat samostya abhyadikah kutonyah lokatrayepya pratima prabhava asi pita You are the father, asya lokasya, of this world. Characharasya, moving and stationary. Tvam pujyaha, you are the adorable one. Cha guruhu, and the teacher. Gariyan, who is superior to all. Astina, there is none. Tvat samaha, equal to you. Kutah, how can there be? Anyaha, another one. Abhyadikaha, superior to you. Apratima prabhava, O Lord, whose power is unmatched. Lokatraye api in all the three worlds. You are the father of this world, moving and stationary. You are the adorable one and the teacher who is superior to all. There is none equal to you. How can there be another superior to you, O Lord, whose power is unmatched in all the three worlds? Tasmat pranamya pranidhayakayam prasadaye tvamaham ishamidyam पितेव पुत्रस्य सखेव सख्युः प्रियः
यारप्पा
प्रियायार्हसि देव सोढुम्। तस्मात् देयरफॉर प्रणम्य सल्यूटिंग प्रणिधाय कायम् एंड प्रस्ट्रेटिंग द बॉडी अहम् प्रसादये ऐ प्रोपिचिये त्वाम् यू ईड्यम् ईशम् द अडोरेबल लॉर्ड देव ओ लॉर्ड अर्हसि सोढुम्। यू शुड फॉरगिव माय ऑफेंसेस इव पिता जस्ट एज अ फादर फॉरगिव्स दोस पुत्रस्य इव ऑफ द सन सखा जस्ट एज अ फ्रेंड फॉरगिव्स दोस सख्युः ऑफ द फ्रेंड प्रियः एंड जस्ट एज अ हस्बैंड फॉरगिव्स दोस प्रियायाः ऑफ द वाइफ। देयरफॉर सल्यूटिंग एंड प्रोस्ट्रेटिंग द बॉडी आई प्रोपिशिएट यू द अडोरेबल लॉर्ड ओ लॉर्ड यू शुड फॉरगिव माय ऑफेंसेस जस्ट एज अ फादर फॉरगिव्स दोस ऑफ द सन जस्ट एज अ फ्रेंड फॉरगिव्स दोस ऑफ द फ्रेंड एंड जस्ट एज अ हस्बैंड forgives those of the wife. Adrushta purvam tushitosmi drushtva bhayena cha pravyatitham mano me tadeva me darshaya deva rupam prasida devesha jagannivasa. Drushtva, seeing universal form, adrushta purvam, which has not been seen before, asmi harshitaha, I am delighted, cha at the same time, me manaha, my mind, Pravyatitam is afflicted bhayena with fear. Deva, O Lord, darshaya me, show me tat rupam eva. Eva, that familiar form itself. Devesha, O Lord of God, O God of gods. Jagannivasa, O Lord, who is the abode of the universe. Prasida, be gracious. Seeing the universal form which has not been seen before, I am delighted. At the same time, my mind is afflicted with fear. O Lord, show me that familiar form itself. O God of gods, O Lord, who is the abode of the universe, be gracious. Kiritinam gadinam chakrahastam icchami twam drashtumaham tathaiva tenaiva rupena chaturbhujena sahasrabaho bhava vishvamurte. Aham icchami, I wish, drashtum, to see you, tatha eva, in the same form as before. Kiritinam, with crown, gadinam, with mace, chakrahastam, and with disc in your hands. Sahasra Baho, O Lord with thousand arms. Vishwamurte, O Lord with universal form. Bhava, appear. Tena eva, with that same, with that very same. Chaturbhujena rupena, four-armed. I wish to see you in the same form as before, with crown, with mace, and with a disc in your hand. O Lord with thousand arms, O Lord with universal form, appear with that very same four-armed form. And I am going to stop.
Rajesh, your Sanskrit study is showing you have better flow and you're more at ease with it.
So in these shlokas, Arjuna is basically praising the Lord, making sure that he's asking for forgiveness for all those past mistakes that he has done. And then he's also explaining that I'm not only amazed to see this divine form, but also I'm scared. I'm afraid. And then he asks him to go back to his familiar form.
Actually, Swami P, categorizes this into three buckets, right? He says first, when the Vishwarupa starts, it is a stage of ascharyam, surprise, a wonderment, right? And then it translates into fear of having seen the Vishwarupa, and culminates in bhakti and reverence with namaskarams, koti koti namaskarams to the Lord, right? So there are three stages that are, Swami P talks about. The second point I took was in these six, seven verses is that I think one thing which is very clearly coming across is that the Lord is omnipotent, omnipresent, and omniscient. Yeah. That is something that, in addition to all the, adjectives he's using to describe the Lord, but I think very clearly he's saying you are the most powerful. You're the Adi Guru, knower of everything, you pervade everything, the Srishti, Laya, everything is happening in you. and you know, you're everything, right? And of course, there is one verse that is verse number 40, which I liked a lot, where he says, you know, I'm doing namaskarams in front of you, you know, behind you, you know. And this is exactly what you know, Satya Sai Baba also used to say. He would say that, you know, God is like, you know, above you, below you, around you, behind you, in front of you, etc. Right? So he's all pervading, he's everywhere. And of course, the point of doing namaskarams is coming, you know, out of complete reverence and respect for the Lord, which is what you know, is referred to. Swami P is referring to it as bhakti. Yeah. So I think these were the few points I took note of. Yeah.
Well said, Subbu. Thank you. Anyone else want to share what struck you from when you were reading Swami Chinmayananda's book?
As he says, you know, it has come down to the transactional world, and you know, I mean, all these seven, eight are so applicable even for us when we think of that, right? I mean, that's what struck me actually. So it has been as if it is written at our levels actually.
No, that's the beauty of this particular set of shlokas, where Arjuna is suddenly shown that Vishwarupa, and then he's made to realize, you know, I think if you recall the beginning of this particular chapter, Bhagavan says that I'm going to give you that divine chakshu, the divine eye, for you to look at who I truly am. And then, I mean, when if we interpret the divine eye as the Vedantic vision rather than physical third eye, as what we would normally see in some of the pictures of Lord Shiva and all that, if we imagine that as the third eye, then he's suddenly given a temporary knowledge of how to visualize Bhagavan, which is pervading into everything. And when he sees this, and when he sees that there's no concept of time or no concept of space in him, then and then he's able to imagine, or he's able to see all the things that are going to happen. And then suddenly he's caught with a fear because he's suddenly gone back to his own ahankara, in terms of saying, okay, hey, this seems to be who I am, but I don't seem to be associated with that universal form. And then once he goes back into that thing, the fear starts setting in, because then the associations with that ahankara starts coming in, and then that fear that automatically introduces the fear. That part of it is very, every time I read this, I keep getting goosebumps, because that's the thing that Arjuna was not able to overcome in this Vishwarupa Darshana chapter, is that, I mean, of course, obviously it was all designed by Bhagavan. I'm going to give you this temporary knowledge for you to see this. Therefore, it's not permanent for him. But because it is not permanent, he goes back between seeing that Vishwarupa and then seeing himself as within the within an embodied as an embodied being, that the sphere starts eating into him. And that's a very beautiful part of the shloka in mind.
Swami Dayananda used to say, "It is a miracle that we are limitless. It is a miracle of miracles that we can imagine ourselves as limited." And just what you said.
Rick, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you very clearly. The voice was a little.
Oh, so Swami Dayananda used to say that it's a miracle that we are limitless, but it's a miracle of miracles that being limitless, we can imagine ourselves as limited.
Beautiful. No, actually, in this context, right, you know, maybe I'll just share something what I learned yesterday, in another class that I attend. So maybe there are I'll try to explain what I learned. Okay, and there are four different words that that I want to introduce here. Okay, one is mukti, one is moksha, third is nirvana, fourth is kaivalya. Okay, these are the four different words that I want to introduce. At the surface level, it seems that all these four words refer to the same thing, but actually these are not the same one. The way that this person was explaining yesterday, my Guruji, he was saying that mukti, which is a step one, is a temporary relief that you would get for some of the quote-unquote problems that you may be facing in life, right? So it could be a health issue or it could be a psychological issue or whatever. If you get a relief, temporary relief, that's mukti from that. That's how we should think about it. And moksha is a permanent relief from that. Okay. But then nirvanam is that state where you have a permanent relief from all the quote-unquote problems. But then there is still an attitude of doership in you, which says that, doership, saying that I do this, therefore, because of me, this thing happens. Okay. And he equates that to some of the rishis, like Vishwamitra or other rishis, where he says that because of the sattvic quality within them, pretty high compared to the rest of the people, they have a sense of ownership or doership still, saying that because of my blessings, this happened to this person. And that state, we as a seeker can also potentially get that. And then the final state is Kaivalyam, where he says that even that sense of doership or sense of ownership just goes away, where you are just being there. And then he maps these four things into three different qualities, right? If you look at it, at the base level, someone who is totally, totally tamasic, when the tamas, where the tamas not as a lethargy in the physical body, I'm saying the mental tamas, when the mental tamas goes, suddenly there's a click which happens and that gives us mukti. Oh, aha, this thing seems to be, working for me. That is the first stage of mukti. But then still we do a lot of rajas, there are a lot of activities. Okay, I am doing it, I will do this. And then you start to do a lot of work on the spiritual direction. And then maybe because of all that, you get a permanent relief from all your problems. That is moksha stage. But then sattva and rajas, both of them are still there within us. And then the third stage is the sattva. Then you say, okay, I don't think that, I am doing it or I am reaping the benefits of this, but I'm just there as an instrument. And then, you have that entity within yourself saying that I am an instrument still. And then that's the sattva saying that, I referred you to go and meet this, therefore you were benefited, and you feel that, happiness, inherent happiness, saying that, okay, because of me, this person went and did this, therefore he is benefited. And, although you don't claim any ownership for that person's benefit, but you yourself will have that attitude saying that it's because of me that this person benefited. And then the final stage is like when even that sattva guna, which just vanishes from you, then you just be, and then you just do whatever you want to do. That's how he was able to explain. And I think in this case, if you look at it, what Arjuna is probably going between rajas and sattva. And then he falls back to rajas rather than go to full sattva. Because if you had gone to full sattva, you would have been out of the war.
Hey, Rajesh, what was it you were saying? Mukti, moksha, what's the third one? I couldn't catch it.
Nirvanam and
Kaivalyam. Okay.
Yeah. Kaivalyam. Yeah.
These so are the four. Is Nirvanam like when you are just observing? Is that the observing stage?
No. Nirvanam is when you have a sense of, let's say that, the predominance of sattva guna within us. And then sattva guna would lead us in that doing all the right things. But then there's an element of, there's a sense within us saying that because of me, all these things are happening in this world, that sense will still remain with us.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's only at Kaivalya that you don't have that anymore.
Yeah, even at Kaivalya, you go beyond the Sattvaguna's influence as well. Till that time, you are in Sattvaguna's influence and you are expected to be in Sattvaguna influence because you have to get over your Raja, Tamas, and then get to the Rajas. But then you also realize that Rajas is leading me out to the outside world and not necessarily bringing me back inside within myself. And then you come to the Sattva stage when the mind has become sufficiently purified. You are acting from the Sattva space within yourself. But then there's this element saying that, okay, oh, because of me, these things could are happening because of my inherent goodness. And then you get over even that.
Then where does the stage where you are just observing fall? Like, things are happening and it's just me, you're being observed, you're observing it.
That would probably be the Sattva stage.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, Srini here. Can I go?
Yeah.
Yeah. See, since we are in this, Bhakti Yoga, chapters, one fundamental question from my side, when do you realize that, you have a real Bhakti? For example, you learn a lot of scriptures and then, they say that you should develop this Bhakti Bhavana and all that. But, sometimes I feel that there is a conflict, between myself, that is my bhakti really real? Or I'm trying to do a pseudo bhakti, or, it is kind of a bit of, hypocritical. So when do we realize that, that is a real bhakti? Will we be given some test or something? I'm just trying to, take this conflict within myself. I know that I have a bhakti, but how do I know that, my bhakti is a true bhakti? So there is always a conflict, whether it is my real bhakti or, I'm trying to, it is a pseudo-bhakti, or I'm trying to force bhakti into myself. So when does that, threshold limit cross that, I am now, totally in bhakti? And with whom should I, calibrate to understand this, whether I'm really in bhakti or not? I mean, a very fundamental question keeps coming and going. Of course, you have a lot of activities. In Karma Yoga, you can do prayer, you can, decorate your, entire house. But is it a real, entire house where you have the, God's place? But is it the real, bhakti you are doing, or you are trying to, force bhakti into yourself? And when is that stage you cross this threshold limit? Is my fundamental question. If somebody can clarify, I will get more close to bhakti. Thank you.
Anyone wants to answer the question?
Well, I'd like to say this. In reality, there is no certification. I mean, no one's going to come and say, oh, now you've got it. So you do have to be just truthful to yourself. I don't think that you should make it obscure. You know in your heart of hearts what you're about. And if you're, and also you have to allow for growth, which also includes setbacks. And if your heart of hearts is that you're looking to be free and you accept the guru or the Lord, whoever you are surrendering to, of course, they're not two, then obviously it's going to deepen. But the idea that there's hurdles, there's merit badges, there's ultimately a certification. Vedanta is about understanding our own experience. And that's why liberation is, it's both personal and impersonal, because there's no one who gets realized, but the one who recognizes that is the one who is realized.
Yeah, thank you, Rick. Understood. But how do I know that, my bar is correct? Should I raise the bar, or should I, I'm at the ultimate bar? So which is the, ultimate bhakti was my question. Of course, I'm trying to, try to be truthful to myself. I'm trying to calibrate with myself. But is that enough? Is that the real bhakti? Is that what is looking, forward to, was my question. So
So I think we have maybe Rick, if you want to explain that, and then we can go to the others.
I just will say this. I mean, one, the Suryadatta Maharaj used to say that when you go, when you when, sur, he defines surrender as when you go to the ocean and you take a cup of water and dump it into the ocean, you can't get it back. You can get water back, but you can't get the surrender back. So when you know that your life is in the hands of the Lord, and it grows, of course, but when it gets to the point that there's only the Lord, well, then obviously the bhakti is complete. There's a point where bhakti and knowledge are not two. Until that point is reached, continue with the bhakti, continue with the jnanam, and then there's a point where it can't be other. When it can't be other, if you want to say there's a sign that shows it to you, okay, that's the sign.
Beautiful.
Thank you, Rick. Thank you. Thank you.
Guns.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Oh, sorry. I thought I lost my connection. Hey, Srini, definitely agree with Rick on this. And I wanted to add 3 points. Okay. Just last night, and I'm revising it over and over. Let me read what Subbu wrote down from his notes, okay, with Swami P. So, convinced or brainwashing is mananam stage where doubts are resolved. So, I would say, I mean, if you really want calibration, we should all calibrate only within ourselves, right?
Correct.
So, when you feel that this is brainwashing, or you still have doubts, right? So, which means that is actually really, really good, because you are doing mananam, you are reflecting upon it, and you are saying, hey, and you have doubts. So Swamiji was saying, ask this question to the intellect and see what answers you get. See if some more doubts are to be resolved. I'm just reading Subbu's notes. Okay. So Swamiji is actually answering your question. In spiritual journey, we normally treat the scriptures as authority and then do checks with our own intellect, which is conditioned basis our current set of experiences. Any difference that arises is termed as a gap, and we should reflect and resolve till the intellect is convinced through the mananam stage. I don't think I can answer this better than that, obviously. But essentially, the message is the same. There is no calibration, like you got it, and yes, there is no exam or none of that. It's the calibration happens within ourselves. So that's why it's called self-examination, right? It's a self-exam. So that's what I think. I mean, it's amazing that you asked this question and the answer is right there from last night's notes. I just felt I'll do that. And just one other point, I was also thinking, sorry, go ahead, Srini.
Sorry, no, I was just trying to, calibrate myself. For example, when you take this bhakti, all these, big gurus like Ramanujam or Madhavacharya, they were all supposed to be at the pinnacle of bhakti, right? They were all highly bhakti, highly surrendered and all that. So what is that, and what am I doing? I mean, when will I reach that level? That is my question. See, I can calibrate with myself, and maybe, I am at level two, but those people are maybe at level 10. What is level
So
10 and what is level two? So what will
this is
happen,
not
go
you're not
from
getting
level
a
to level?
black belt, right? You're not
No,
getting a
no.
black belt. You're not going through
No, I'm
belts,
just,
right?
yeah, no, I'm just saying, what is that kind of bhakti which is required? Should I feel overwhelmed, or, whenever I pray, should I get tears in my eyes automatically? What is that, things which needs to happen to me internally so that I understand, my bhakti is increasing? I mean, I'm just trying to be very practical. Of course,
Of
like
course.
Rajesh was saying, see, tamasic, I'm pretty sure we are not tamasic. Okay, a little bit of rajasic and sattvic is there in me. I'm trying to quote from myself. Okay, rajasic, of course, I'm a little bit still into this, world. I want my money, I need to do my job, all that is there. But I feel at least I am, you know, to some extent I am sattvic. You know, I don't, you know, use harsh words, or I try to control my harsh words. Raga dvesham, I'm trying to control. So I know that I'm there, but how do I know, you know, is that enough? Or what is that, you know, the real bhakti, so yeah. that, you know, I can, you know, try to, you know, elevate or, you know, improve myself. That is my very fundamental question.
Yeah, so
because I should be happy. I've reached my ultimate bhakti. And now, you know, I'm the best bhakti person in this, you know, locality. I can't do that, na? So,
no.
What is that?
I love the way you articulated this question and explained on it.
Yeah, no, it's funny, Srini, but the thing is, the fact that you're being so honest, right, and so genuine about it, itself is a, in my opinion, it's a great thing, okay? You're being very honest, and you are actually looking at your intellect, like Swamiji is saying, and saying, I'm going through all these things. There's a lot of things that I still am not very clear about, right? So, seriously, it's a very, very good, because you are doing a lot of reflection, right? I think that I have always found, I can give only my example, okay? I've always found when you do this reflection, there is a peace that comes over you. Because you know that you are honestly reflecting, right? I was only going to make one other point. When Krishna, K2, myself, VP and Ajay went to see both the Swamijis. This was in 22, actually. It's going to be 2 years now. So we went to Thiruvannamalai and also met Swami G on the way. Then when went back to Chennai and met Swami P and spent, you know, 2 hours with Swami G and at least an hour with Swami P. With Swami G, before we went in, we were all discussing, how do we know if he is enlightened or not? Okay, we were so curious about it. So, and when we went in, we all fell silent, and then we slowly started talking, and we were asking a lot of general questions. And then VP or Ajay, it wasn't me, it was one of the others. I said, Swamiji, how do we know, how do we identify an enlightened person? And Swamiji said, there is no answer to that. Only the enlightened person, only the jnani will know whether he or she or that person is a jnani. Yeah. You cannot go and ask, are you enlightened, you know, have you already, are you self-realized or whatever? But the thing is, if you see a person's actions and you see externally what they are doing, you kind of get an indication, okay? That's one thing. We went and asked the same question to Swami P when we met him. Same question. Roundabout way, you know, trying to figure out whether Swami P is enlightened, whether Swami G is enlightened. And guess what the answer was? It was like a copy and paste. He said exactly the same thing. Okay. So we're talking about ourselves, right? It's not about the external world. So that's when I also, it dawned on me, like, forget about asking those questions. Just keep working. Keep working. Keep doing what you're supposed to be doing. That's what he's saying in Subbu's notes as well. Keep reflecting.
Yeah. A lot of hands raised. Who was an Ekadikishore? It was you next. Go.
Yeah. Once again, Srini, thanks for the question. Very honest. And I think this question is there in a lot of people's minds, especially I can certainly identify with it from a few years ago when, you know, often we are kind of, at least growing up, we were kind of God fearing as well, right? It's like almost a fear. And you have to cross all those stages and come to more of an understanding, right? And then moving forward, it is a journey, there is no doubt. And it's a question of where we are. And what you're saying is, I don't know where I am and how long the journey is. Just want to get a sense of where I am, right? That's kind of the gist of the question. Personally speaking, the way it has evolved for me is the God-fearing part went away, you know, that station passed. And then more into the understanding part, right? It happened again through intervention, obviously from the universe, right? That certain things happened, and then you're back on this path. So to me, one of the key indicators, if you will, is the amount of vairagya, right? Is the binding. So how can we see, how can we know what is the amount of vairagyam? It would be the binding. It would be how, if we were to introspect ourselves, given a situation, how much is my craving for a certain outcome? How much am I getting, how much am I suffering when certain things don't work the way I want it to work, right? When things don't play out the way I want it to work, how much am I distressed? How much distress do I go through? Or when things really come through, even more, there's a lot of tailwind and there is just a lot of things that I get, even though I may or may not deserve it. How much elated am I, or am I just balanced? Do you see that equanimity? Do you see that vairagyam in you in terms of both sides? I think that gives an indication of where you are in the journey, right? And this is easy to, not easy, but it's at least within you and you can introspect. You don't have to tell anybody this. You can just see for yourself where you are, right? So so that vairagyam would be, to me, a big one. And the other two things, very quickly, one is obviously FIR, right? Apply this. Again, it's not going to, you wouldn't see this as a flip switch going from this to that, right? Especially, it's a gradient. You're going to see going through these things where there are days when we might falter. There is no doubt, 100% sure that we'll go through those stages many, many times. We'll continue to falter, but again, let's see how many times that's happening, how intense it is, how quickly we come back, right? Once we falter. So that is the practice that we can apply. And over time, the FIR is going to improve in the right direction, causing the vairagyam to go up. Third part around some of these rituals, I'm sure you are probably also looking into that, thinking about it, saying where do they kind of fit in. The way I've now come to understand rituals is that it helps us move from being predominantly tamasic to predominantly rajasic, because it's getting us to do something. It is getting us to wake up in the morning, do this and that, or arrange this, arrange that, make this, go there, go somewhere. So it's getting us to be rajasic and keeping us in the rajasic stage, right? At least getting us out of tamas. So that's kind of how I see rituals, whatever those rituals may be, whether it's religious or otherwise, it's getting us to be there. Whether those things directly have an impact, I don't know. But for people who are following religious rituals, I would say that's kind of how I understand it today, right? Personally, I don't do it, but I finally understood what place it plays in the journey, right? So those are the three things I'd like to share. Thank you.
Understood. Just two Thank more perspectives. Let me share. Can I go? Sorry. Perspective which Swami P brings in bhakti is, he says, you know, since you know that you know there is an atma in everybody, so you know it is very natural since it is an atma, you can actually, you know, fall at the feet of everybody. For example, you know, anybody going on the road is atma, anybody going on the road is God. So one kind of surrender would be, you know, like surrender is falling at the feet, so you can fall at the feet of everybody. No, but so this is one aspect of, you know, total bhakti. Let us assume this. But, you know, how do we calibrate this? You know, can we go and keep on falling at everybody's feet or not? You know, is one question. You know, can we do that? Or should we, you know, take, you know, contemplative thinking of that and keep it okay? Understand that, you know, everybody has got this, you know, atma and everybody is God. So that is one. And second, you know, what he says, you know, you don't get into the total surrender and, you know, make everybody, you know, a fool of you. So you can also, you know, react to situations where you are being mocked or, you know, it doesn't mean that whatever others say you need to accept by the kind of surrender. Because of course there is, you know, sama dama bheda dandam. So wherever you need to use your high voice, or wherever you need to get angry, you need to get angry. It doesn't mean that once you attain total surrender that you will accept everything, you will become a mockery, you will say everything okay, that is also not required, he says. So where is this boundary? So that is one aspect of the question. The second thought which come to my mind is, for example, this Annamaya is one of the, devotee of, God, Tirupati. So when he was walking, taking a walk through the Tirupati, the final steps are available, right? As soon as he went there, he found that, it is God, and he felt, how can I put my, foot here? And in the final steps, he literally, climbed the hill on his knees. No, he never put his foot. He went through his knees. So this is one story which comes from the Annamaya tale, where he saw Tirupati Balaji.
And you then, mean Annamacharya?
Annamacharya. Annamacharya. And he went through his knees. Okay, these are all pinnacles of bhakti. So just trying to understand where we need to put our thought process from the learnings. And understand that, our bhakti is also reasonably, good. We are also going in the right direction. That is my very fundamental question. Whether bhakti is the final suffering, with the suffering you enjoy, or, based on your capacity, can you, limit your bhakti based on your capacity, your limits, your societal commitments and all that. Simple. Sorry, this is what is my question.
No, that's fine. It's better you're clarifying. I think there are more hands raised. So let's see, Kishore, you have anything to answer that, or should I just pass on the baton to somebody else now?
Pass it on, please.
Yeah. Okay, Sakuba.
Yeah, so Peter, very valid question, because most of us go through this, and great answers too. So my answer is pretty well aligned to what Kishore was saying as his first point. So I will not repeat the same thing, but I think one thing that you may use is that, when you are saying bhakti or when you are praying, do you pray? Two things that I want to say. One is, do you pray with something in return? Is it a sakama bhakti or a nishkama bhakti kind of a thing? And second is, when things don't happen, the way what you, you did, You think that you had a great bhakti. You prayed very, very sincerely and had absolutely sattvic, with sattvic mind and so on. But whatever you prayed didn't happen. How did you react to it? So these two will determine whether, you have, you want to, move across the bhakti lane, and then whether you walk with your legs or walk with your knees. If you expect something in return, then I don't think that is, regardless of how you do it, by physically troubling you or by using your wealth to do a great ritual, I don't think these are these will help. When you are praying, when you are having bhakti, are you expecting anything back in return? I think will determine what is your attitude to that will determine whether you have reached there or not.
Understood, Sagwa. I had three stages in my life. The initial stage, I just used to go to temple. I don't pray. I just see the deity. I just do the namaskaram and come back. I never had any prayers. That was the initial stage. There was a stage, when I was discussing in a different satsang, people said, if you don't ask to God, he may not give, because you never ask anything, I don't give anything. So, that was one stage. So where, maybe I asked something and maybe I got, I didn't get. Okay, that was a different question. But if I ask with something, that if you do this, I will do this, usually the transaction which we normally do. Even if I fail, I never missed my transaction, because I kept my part of the promise and I continued my bhakti. Maybe, I was not deserving to get that result was my, feeling. I took it in the stride. Now, growing more and understanding more of the scriptures, like you said, Sagama Bhakti, Nishkama Bhakti. Of course, I know I'm still not there. Certain things I need to, you know, pray to get my, you know, things done. If I'm not able to, you know, do it through the regular mechanisms, I of course, you know, approach God that I'm struggling. Please support me. Please help me. And sometimes it happens and sometimes doesn't happen. So these are the three stages. So of course, the final stage is, you know, not asking anything and surrender totally to the God. That is what is now we are trying to learn. But whether to ask or not to ask, you know, it was the question. Now, slowly shifting from not asking to asking, from asking to not asking is happening. But the question was, you know, am I really there? You know, maybe I was asking 10, I'm asking 2 now. Is it okay? Or should I ask 0? So this is what is my question.
And what do you do when those two things that you ask for, only one of them, you know, happened and the other thing didn't happen? What was your attitude
in both you know activities? I thank God. Okay, I said in one activity, thank you for you know creating the success. In other activity, like I took it in the stride, I said, you know, thank you, maybe I was not deserving to it. So that is what is you know that was what is my perspective. I never got angry with God because I know God is there. You know, I also have you know my own karma. But you know, understanding so much of karma, there comes a stage, you know, where I couldn't prevent myself from asking. Seri ketudam paapume, I mean, enna nadakkudhu nadakkattum. Okay.
But do you ask for yourself? Do you ask for, you know, this thing? I think those also will probably come into it.
You know, if you want more specific answers, no, I never ask for myself. I never compete myself with anybody. No, I'm happy with what I have. All that stage I have reached. Okay, I don't want more. Okay, all that stage I have reached. But of course, you know, inflation is there. You know what is required. No, all that is there. But anyways,
only the crying part hasn't happened. That's what you're saying.
No, in fact, I was coming to that. You know, the crying part also has happened. Really?
So, sorry, I was just, you know,
no.
Take it seriously.
No, really, in fact, you know, that was one incident, you know, yeah, it was in the month of December. Okay, we were planning to go to Thirunamalai. Somehow, you know, the Thirunamalai plan got cancelled. I know I'm trying to be very frank with you. As soon as, you know, I came home, I switched on the television that Thirunamalai, you know, Deepam was going on. When I, you know, when I saw that, you know, Deepam being lit, you know, I started, you know, tears in my eyes. I know I couldn't stop my, you know, cry. I don't know what created that cry, okay? And I was really, you know, hiding from room to room because my wife was also going here and there. She will see this and ask what you are doing now, why you are crying and all that. So I was trying to, you know, hide from her also. But there was a big gush of, you know, tears in my eyes. I don't know why it happened. 10 minutes, you know, in fact, Tamil la solrana ekki ekki eluna. I'm being very frank because we are all, you know, together for so many years. So this has happened to me. So is this the pinnacle of bhakti? I don't know. Then I controlled myself. Nee alu enada pandra idu thirunamala po mudiyala adutha maasam po pora. Why you are crying? I didn't have an answer, but it was like, you know, serious cry. That was one. And second, when I visit Tirupati Balaji, sometimes I feel I get so much overwhelmed, I come out crying after seeing the final thing. Maybe it is only for last, you know, 2-3 minutes we see, but I start crying. I don't know. I mean, crying is a good gesture or not. Some people say, you know, you are so, you know, feeble-minded that you start crying. But I felt tears rolling in my eyes. I mean, these are the two incidents, both in Thirunamalai and Tirupati. I get tears. I don't know why. So this is one, you know, experience of mine. I'm trying to be very, you know, open and frank.
So, Srini, thank you for this, for the clarification. I know there are a lot of hands raised, but if you don't mind, I want to probably take 30 seconds and just, you know, say something and then I'll
Rajesh, I also want to say something from Narada Bhakti Sutra. It has some definitions. I'll just quote some 2-3 sutras, but after you. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, Srini, I think a great question. I think all of us struggle with this. And, you know, and without repeating the answers, what from individual perspectives that have been shared here, one of the things that has personally helped me is when I'm doing any prayer, what is the sankalpa that I'm having in my mind? Okay. So,
okay.
If the quality of my sankalpa or the orientation of my sankalpa determines the maturity of my bhakti on that particular day. So some days I ask for some things, some days I don't ask for some things. Okay, that only I know, nobody else will know, because that sankalpa is repeated in my mind. So going back to the same thing about FIR, what Kishore was saying, the question is, how often am I asking something? How often am I asking nothing at all? Okay. And then finally, am I doing this with an attitude of gratitude to the universe or whatever that would say, okay, I am doing this only for this particular reason. There's nothing else that I want.
Understood.
That is the measure that I am seeing for myself.
Okay. Understood.
So with that,
excellent.
Probably we'll pass on the baton. And thank you for the great question. And I'm going to take leave. Hari Om.
Thank you. Thank you. Sorry, I put a lot of time in this question.
No. Maybe... It's a beautiful question. And I think all questions are important. And especially coming from individual perspectives. See, nobody here is trying to tell you quote-unquote theoretical answers to the question, because we are also struggling with the same questions. And the whole idea is, what is our individual experience? It could be right or wrong. That doesn't matter. If it creates a aha moment in somebody else, maybe not necessarily to the questioner, somebody else, that's it. That's the purpose of the satsang is served.
Yeah. Thanks, before closing, Rajesh, just 2 minutes. In fact, when we read, Ramana Maharishi article, so whenever, somebody reads some good scriptures to him, Thiruvasagam or something, certain, paragraphs of Thiruvasagam, when Ramana Maharishi hears, tears start rolling his eyes. That is what is said. He keeps, crying for, maybe half an hour, 45 minutes, and then he takes his time and then explains that. So, I'm not saying I'm Ramana Maharishi, but, it happens to, people at that maturity level also.
Sure.
Yeah. So this is one I have not seen. But, I have been attached to a Guruji, who taught me yoga. So, he taught me this simple yoga practices. It was a 10-week, course, long back, 5 years back. So, it includes everything, breathing technique, then meditation. Then finally, he will also start speaking about, things around the world. So, one thing which he explained was, for example, you are not able to support some calamity. For example, you have... Somebody, 100 people are getting killed in Somalia. And, what happens? How can you support that? You want to support that. How can you support that? So he was saying, the only thing you can do is, you have a 2-minute, silence. Okay. Feel for their families. Feel for the people, who have suffered. That itself is a very, very big thing you're doing. Okay. The 2 minutes silence of trying to understand their empathy is a big thing, you're doing. And while saying this, this particular Guruji, tears are, rolling from his eyes. This is one thing, I have seen. He is actually teaching this for the past 25 years. He's called Dr. Ramdas. He also stays in Mailapur only. Okay. And his Guruji has asked him to, teach this yoga practices to as many people as possible. So he does only the yoga. It is a 1 week, 1 week to 10 days things. And, tears have started rolling his eyes, he was only telling, I was sitting on the other side and listening. But whenever he tells this about people's empathy, he literally starts crying. Wiki wiki adarara avaru. Adu edhukane puriyala. These are all some of the instances of bhakti I have seen. So is this the pinnacle of bhakti? That is one question. Or is there more things to do? Should I go on my knees to Tirupati? Should I do this? I may not be able to do this. But anyways, these are some of the questions.
Vidya?
Sorry. Thank you.
Vidya, you want to go? I'll go after that.
Sure. Srini, thank you for the question and the description of what you are thinking in your mind. Certainly, what's in your mind is not in my mind. So my experiences would be different. I really liked how Rick and, Guns explained certain things, and so did Satya Sakuba. What I would say is, I think we cannot compare bhakti from our mind to Ramanuja's or Shankaracharya's or, that at that level. What's there for us is what we can do. And if somebody's eyes are being teared, that for them it's bhakti. May not be for us, it's bhakti, right? In our mind.
Correct.
So
Correct.
We cannot go there at all. I would just give an example of experience of bhakti. I do get tears when some song is played and I understand the meaning and I can visualize a deity, or I do get tears, but it's there. It's not viki viki ardha. It's one or two, but that's my level of bhakti. But I would give an example. 2 years ago, I had gone to Parthasarathi temple, and I know the sannadi fully, Ramar sannadi, Ranganathar sannadi, and then you go to Parthasarathi sannadi, come back, and it's a long process. So I usually used to go once a year, or whenever we used to go from Pilani to Chennai. So it's not like a ritual every time we go. When you have time, you go, right? And that also, when you're very far away, you're not usually going to Triplicane to go see Parthasarathi. So 2 years ago, it was similar. I went there and my train of my mind was go to Ramar Sannadhi, then Ranganathar Sannadhi, and then go. But it was all blocked and it was very crowded. And I had come for some Tirmanjanam very late. And I was quite like, what should I do? It's such a crowded and I have to find my family, everyone. So I was standing in the crowd and there was one lady who said, oh, do you want to go in front? And she pushed me to go in front. And then I saw this whole thing blocked, but I really wanted to go to the Ramar Sannadhi and Ranganatha Sannadhi and say my Ashtakam, Ranganatha Ashtakam. Why I wanted to do that, I have no idea. It was just that split second that
split of the second.
Yeah, that came and I broke the rules. Like a child, I went inside the small gap and I went to both the Sannadhis. Right behind me, the police person came. And why did not he, you know, shout at me, arrest me, or do? I have no idea. In fact, he let me pray both the Sannadhis. I said my Ashtakam, and he came and he brought me right in front of Parthasarathi, right in front. And he let me be there for 15 minutes. Excellent. And then he told me the whole story of Parthasarathi. The police person, the guy who was a policeman. To me, that is bhakti. So, you know, you definitely would have gone through this. And it's not that you have to go through, but it will come. But you never know when it will come. So you cannot. Now, if somebody doesn't have this experience, doesn't mean that they don't have bhakti. I'll put that also.
Understood.
It doesn't mean that they don't have bhakti. Definitely they have. But it's the experience, how we take it. And even with all the, things that you have done wrong unknowingly. My goal was only to pray. But I broke all the rules, right? The rules that have been made. But I never thought that I broke those rules at that moment. My only thing was at that moment, just think about, and why that lady came, that lady comes to my mind even now. I had no relation with her. Why did she come and ask me to go inside? Why did that policeman come and do this? I have no idea.
It may not happen every time. It may not happen every time also.
Yes.
It's just that day you were bhavna and you were destined to get it, correct, actually. Yeah.
Correct. And that's why I think Annamaya or Annamacharya did. He wanted to go in his knees. That was his thing. It is a story. Like how I'm telling the story for me, right? It's my story. But Annamaya's story is his story. You all may be different. But that doesn't mean that you don't have bhakti. You probably have. It may be very small, which may not be, which for others may not be an enlightening story. But still is a story. Even smallest story. And that's what you see in Purusha Suktam, right? Smallest of the smallest and the largest of the largest. Finite to infinite. So please don't compare. I think you have a lot of bhakti. So you should go with that.
Since being the, bhakti part of the 6 chapters, I thought, I should deliberate this from my personal experience. I mean, frankly, it came out, from my inner mind.
that I should, you know, ask this group to understand this better. In fact, I'm getting a lot of input. Thank you very much.
And this group is the most, in a free group, we can just say our mind as if we are saying to ourselves, right?
Yes, yes. So that is what I stated in the beginning. Yes, yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Welcome.
Srini, you're a very beautiful person. Let me start with that. I really love the sincerity and the earnestness that you have, you know, for seeking this. I will just, you know, share a few things with you. This is what I have read in the last 1 month. I did Narada Bhakti Sutra. Yeah.
Hey, Srini has always been a beautiful person.
No. I'm reiterating it. Yeah. So Srini, this is something that I have done last month. You know, I did the Narada Bhakti Sutra. Right, at the 84 sutras, okay. And I'm now going to give you information which is there in the sutras. Okay, it's not my making, and this is, I give you reference sutra number 16 to sutra number 21. I think your answers are there. Okay. Right. Okay. Now, from 16 to this one, actually, it starts off. You know, there are the same question as what is bhakti is asked to different acharyas. Okay, and now I'm going to give you as to how each acharya has explained it.
The first one
is Vedavyasa, the son of Parashar. Okay.
Okay.
For him, bhakti is fondness of worship. Okay. The need to actually serve the Lord through puja, worship, bath, archana, you know, etc., 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 is actually bhakti. So Vedavyasa defines bhakti as worship. Okay. Where you are involved in serving the Lord. Now we'll go to the next acharya. Next acharya is Gargi. Okay.
Right? Okay.
He says bhakti is, you know, listening to the leelas of the Lord. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're so excited. So if you go back to our 10th chapter, Bhagavad Gita 10.9, yeah, there is this sloka which says, Machittaha Madgata Pranaha Bodhayanta Parasparam Katayanta Cha Maam Nityam Tushyanti Cha Ramanti Cha. Okay. So what he says in the second line is, my devotees, they derive great satisfaction and bliss in enlightening one another about me and my glories. Right? So, you know, when you sit and talk about, like you're saying about Ramana Maharshi today, you know, right? And it is a sense of happiness for a lot of people that have heard what you're trying to say about Tirupati, Ramana Maharshi. You know, some people, when they talk about their Gurujis, they're so excited, no? They want to talk about their Gurujis to everybody, right? You know, because they made such a huge impact, and that is bhakti, right? And that bhakti is, you know, talking about the leelas of the Lord. Okay, this is how Gargi defines bhakti, right?
Mm.
Now I will go to the Shandilya, okay, the third acharya. The third acharya, Shandilya, he says bhakti is abidance in the self. Okay?
Okay.
Bhakti is pleasure in the self, abidance in the self, okay? That's how he puts bhakti, okay? This is a very, you know, when you say tasmat kar sarveshu kaleshu mamanusmara yudhyacha, at one end, when you say it is bhakti, you say it is actually, you know, think of the Lord at all times. When you say, for a jnani, the person will say abidance in the self. So this is Shandilya's version of what is bhakti. Now we come to the grand master of it all, okay? Narada himself, right? Who is supposed to be the proponent of bhakti. So now they ask Narada, define bhakti, okay? And he says two things, okay? And please reflect this on your message that you just gave us, okay? The first thing is dedicating all the actions to the Lord, okay? Which is like ananya bhakti, right? You say you have firmness and conviction in this. And the second one is what I want you to pay attention to, is extreme anguish if God is forgotten.
Mm.
When God is taken away from you, there is extreme anguish and miserable situation. He's a bhakta. So if Tiruvannamalai did not happen to you and you literally cried in front of the Lord, it is what qualifies here, you know, in the second statement as far as how I see it. Okay. So the first one is ananya bhakti. Okay. And the second one is udasinata. That is the time, you know, it is taken away. So let us say, for example, you're in the habit of going to an Anjaneya temple every day, right? One day you don't do it. You feel miserable. As if something has been taken away from you. I don't do Gayatri Jamafonde, I do miserable. You know, that is the bhakti that you're talking about. So Narada defines bhakti as two aspects. One is dedicating all the actions to the Lord. And the second one is extreme anguish and miserableness if God is taken away or the God is forgotten. Okay.
Understood.
So that's how he refers this. And therefore, he gives some examples also. Okay. So one is, you know, the Sita situation in Sundarakanda is also very similar. Extreme anguish because of separation from Lord Rama.
Mm.
Okay. Constantly thinking of Rama and extreme anguish for being separated from Rama. That is bhakti. Okay.
Understood.
At the same time, another example is given of Gopikas, right? Gopikas, the Gopikas of Vraja, right? Separated from Krishna, you know, they were, you know, completely miserable. Yeah. So, in fact, apparently Narada went to, Vrindavan and he met a Gopika and the Gopika was sitting there, you know, and she was miserable. And Narada asked the Gopika, you know, what are you doing? And the Gopika tells him, you know, this Krishna has made my life so miserable, you know, so miserable, right? That I am sitting here meditating to forget him. Okay. And she tells Narada, I'm trying so hard, but I can't forget him.
Forget him.
Yeah. I'm trying so hard, but I can't. Narada actually propitiates, I mean, just does namaskaras to that Gopika. Now, these are all some examples in Narada Bhakti Sutra, okay? Right?
Okay.
So, I think some 4 or 5 examples. Of course, there is a lot of thing as to how would you define bhakti and what is bhakti, etc. Yeah. There's a lot of other, connotations here. But I just thought these 3-4 sutras may have some reference to your question, okay?
Excellent. Excellent, Subbu. Excellent.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, Srini, I know Ajay was going to go. I just put 7.15 and 16 in the chat. Just take a look. This is what Guntax was referring to.
Okay? Yeah, yeah, sure. Thanks. Yes, yeah. Yes, thanks.
Hey, Ajay, I think you are, your hand is raised. You are up.
Yeah, I can go. I can go. I'm actually not. I'm outside, so I'm just holding back. So so great question, Srini, and fantastic conversation. I think very helpful to me as well. But I kind of sort of agree with, I think, what Vidya said, which is bhakti is different for different people, right? And for somebody, I have to say that, you know, I am just not able to, and I was kind of reflecting on what Srini said about crying and, you know, going to see the Lord and visiting some places. I mean, we were talking about going to Mansarovar and that hasn't happened, but none of those things kind of make me sort of emotional or even when I go to a temple. I mean, I go because I like it, but not because it kind of makes me, I mean, it's not because, I mean, I'm not keen to go, but when I go, I enjoy it. Let me put it that way, right? It, you know, so ritualism, etc., has never resonated with me, right? And so bhakti for me is therefore a kind of, the concept is slightly different, and I'm going to elaborate on what I think Sakuba was saying about asking and not asking, right? to me, it's about the Lord is somebody who knows everything and I know nothing. I mean, I know like one sort of very small fraction of what there is to know. And so I think bhakti is basically at one level about relying on that supreme power, Ishvara, to guide you forward. Okay, so that's kind of one important fact. I think that is a given, and I'm sure this group kind of cannot disagree with it, because I think we all agree with that, right? So we are kind of just a small fraction or, you know, speck of dust in the big scheme of things. I think the point around sort of the way I think about bhakti is there is sakama bhakti and there is nishkama bhakti, exactly as Sakuba was elaborating. And I think it's an accepted fact that we've got to move from sakama bhakti to nishkama bhakti. And that step is a big step, very difficult. There's too much raga dvesha and lack of vairagyam, etc., to go to that point, right? And so I think there are, in terms of asking, you know, there is one is, I need this, help me, Lord, right? So you're, it's a sakama bhakti, you're asking for it. You know, it may or may not happen, but you ask explicitly, right? The other is kind of nishkama and say, look, I don't want anything. It's just, you know, there is no ask here, right? I think the one step that I've graduated to is somewhere in between. You don't ask. At the same time, you ask by saying that, give me what I deserve. Right?
Fantastic. So, yes.
So you're not saying that, look, give me ABC. You're not saying don't give me anything either. But just kind of saying, look, I am your servant, or I am your bhakta, or whatever you want to call it, and say, you know best, give me whatever is best. I know you are fair, and just leave it at that, right? So that's something on a practical side has helped me reconcile with this whole concept of nishkama and sakama, because sakama is what we all do, nishkama is what we all aspire to, and I think it's difficult. So I'm trying to see what is that midway step that can help me move forward.
Understood.
Ajay, I wanted to add one thing that you just said. You know, ask for, give me what I deserve. I tried that, and I would change it to, you've already given me what I deserve. You know, you've already given.
Yeah, this. I mean. Yeah, no, I agree with you. With you. I mean, I think it's just choice of words. I mean, it's more around sort of, you're going to give me whatever I deserve. So I'm just going to be, I'm not going to ask. You're going to be, you're there to look after me. And so just do what needs to be done, kind of a thing, right? So not asking anything, not saying anything, just saying, okay, I'm in your hands, kind of thing, right? And of course, you know, if you look at the fourth level of bhakta, which is Kunti, the Kunti Stuti, which we went through, which is to say, give me pain, give me sorrow, right? Because that's a sure way for me to remember the Lord, right? Now that's kind of, I think, a step too far in some ways, particularly from where we possibly are in our journey. But yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, I mean, again, as I think Vidya, you were saying, I mean, for me, the what doesn't resonate, but I think this logical sort of step is what I try and practice. Not always successfully, but yeah, it helps.
Very well said. Thanks, Ajay.
Thank you.
Srini, let me make one comment again. I'm going to circle back. And that is, the desire to know where we are is 100% natural. But you have to be careful of over-analysis. You know, I'd like to take you, lift you, and shake you upside down. Because really, the measuring is done by whom? Ahankara. And what are we measuring? Darkness. So to me, although it's valid, Swami Dayananda said that the Lord is the most democratic. Because if you ask for anything and the Lord, he will give you that thing. But if you only ask for him, he will give you himself.
Correct.
To me, that's a perfect guide for bhakti. And that's where, however you get up the mountain, the view from the top is the same. The view is whether there is only the Lord or there is only the self, it is the same view. And if that's what you desire, let some of the analysis go, because it doesn't really matter. It'll happen in its own speed. And you're both not far from it, and you are there, and we all have to make the journey. All are true simultaneously. But relax a little in the sense of, don't harass your mind, because the mind's not going to come up with an answer anyway. It's not, you know, again, I'll go to the Sergadas comment that within the mind, there are no answers. Beyond the mind, there are no questions.
Perfect. Understood.
Well said. Well said, Rick.
Yeah. Excellent. Very excellent, nice. Rick. Thank you.
Everybody with that sort. Everybody. And again, it's both incremental. And you know me, I'm an extremist. I like to go to the Vedantin view because that's been the most helpful to me.
Excellent, excellent. In fact, you know, last 2 weeks I was off the grid. You know, I was traveling and I could not connect. I was literally feeling guilty that, you know, I could not connect to this satsang. I mean, that was one guilt which I felt. And you know, I was abroad. I was in Europe. You know, I found, you know, people. In fact, you know, my own son. I went to meet him there. So you know, he was not offering even the basic prayers. So I kind of tuned him to say at least start with some prayers every day, and think of God every day. I mean, just off the grid. I'm just trying to say that if I miss this, I feel really guilty and bad that I missed something really good, which could have been done. But of course, I was traveling and I could not connect. Just something which I wanted to say.
Hey, Srini, those waffles looked great. What do you? I'm just kidding, obviously. I wanted to add one comment, just adding to what Rick was saying. While you were talking, Rick, I was thinking the extremist point of view. It's actually a beautiful way to put it. The last phrase that you used about the mind, when you stay within or without. And I was thinking about, Swami Sarvapriyanandaji, he explains the drishya, observer and observed. So beautifully in several videos, there are lots of them out there. And I remember last year when he was here in Atlanta, he did the same thing, the Drik Drishya. And I think he does this in every lecture that he does, almost, right? And he was talking about this, basically exactly what you were saying, like the Vedanta point of view, which is when we say we are praying to the Lord, right? That is still... that is still, how do I put this, right? That's still the so-called paroksha. So we are saying that the Lord is out there, but that's not exactly how we should think about it. It is, aham brahmasmi, right? So if we tell ourselves that and keep reflecting on it, it's very, very hard to do. Like this morning when I was meditating also, I was meditating and I was trying to do that, and then suddenly I was thinking all kinds of like monkey mind, two or three things that had to be done and planning, and suddenly I was like no, observe. so the thing is, it's a very hard thing, but I think if we keep that in mind, I feel that the bhakti thing will it's automatic. I don't think Correct. There's any calibration or anything that needs to happen. Yeah. I just wanted to add that.
Fantastic.
Yeah, just to kind of connect back to sort of our, chapter 11. I mean, when Arjuna sees the Vishwarupa, I mean, there is this sort of explicit visual realization that God is everything, right? And I think, that is a pretty important point, because, I mean, we all know it. I mean, each one of us knows that there is a power, you can call it whatever you will, but that's guiding your destiny and destiny not in the sort of, not trying to kind of get into that debate around destiny and fate, but sort of there's somebody out there who's doing it. And I think just reminding ourselves every day, every moment that, it is not me. I mean, I am just the least important person in this whole construct, and that there is a bigger power is bhakti in a way, right? Because that's kind of something that we just are unable to do all the time regularly. We just do it when we need it or when we remember it. And that's where I think the whole abhyasam and whether it is meditation or prayer or whatever comes in.
Excellent.
And Srini, I know you love Ramana Maharshi. And if you brought this question to Ramana, he would say, who's asking?
Yes.
And that's a challenge, Rick, because the Vedanta point of view, I think, is totally, totally kind of correct. It's just that, it's very abstract. But I think the way I like the Vedanta sort of approach is, it gives you the answer and then you kind of go around sort of saying, how do I go from point A to B, right? So I think that way Vedanta is beautiful, but otherwise I still find it very abstract to say, okay, this is all understood by the intellect, but how do I go from A to B?
Well, let me just comment briefly on that. That goes back to this brainwashing little debate that was happening or comments that were being put on the site. If I say I am, is there any confusion about I am? Is that a theory? Is that something that is being forced upon me? Everyone knows I am. And before you fill in the blank, I am this, I am that, I am that, I am simply aware. That awareness is ever free. That awareness is who you are. There is nothing abstract about I am. It is abstract to say I am the body mind. It is not abstract to say I am the one who knows the body mind.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's not abstract in the sense that, you know, while, again, I'm going to repeat a little bit, but you totally get it. I mean, I am awareness. I am not this body mind. And the question is that how do you get that that experience, if you will, right? I mean, experience again is the wrong word, but how do you get to a point where you are, you know, you're at a point where you're going to say, no, this is it. So I think, and I think just knowing that is important, and I think that helps kind of frame the whole sort of spiritual journey. But at a certain level,
that also, if you employ it, I understand what you're saying. I don't disagree. But in any moment, so I'm caught up in an emotion, and suddenly I just say, I'm aware of this. I'm aware of this thought. Yeah. I'm aware of this feeling. Just that's all it is. You're always the awareness of. And that awareness is never conditioned or defined by the content of the mind, by the content of experience. And there is no experience without awareness. You could have no experience whatsoever if there were no awareness. So again, I'm just trying to say, there's a way, I think a very simple way, to connect with yourself on that level at any given moment. Because whatever the moment is, you're aware of it. And that awareness is not subject to it.
No, I agree totally, totally, Rick. I mean, I think it's a question of how do you triangulate, you know, which direction do you go from? And I think you've got to go from both sides at a certain level to get to that sort of point. And again, different people are at different stages of the journey. And, you know, like I was saying, I mean, I'm not a big sort of ritualistic person. And I liked how, I can't remember who said that, you basically, I think Kishore said that, you know, rituals are a way to move from tamasic to rajasic, and that's a nice way to think about it. But so there are people who are more sort of, shall I say, not religious, but more ritualistic than others. So I think, again, everyone is on a different journey, and the question of how do you go from point A to B, there are a million ways. But knowing that sort of entire sort of framework, I think, is certainly helpful in framing your own mind around it.
Excellent. Yeah. Hey, wanted to add one comment. Coming, I know we are doing 38 to 46, right, in chapter 11, and you were referring to that, Vishwarupa, Jay. This concept of I am also, Swami G in his meditation sessions. I don't know, some of you might be following, but they are all in Tamil. Okay, So I follow that. And in the end, he says, I am aware. I mean, he talks about awareness. And then he says, all these things are my tools, my body, my mind, my capability to think and act on things. They're all my tools. I handle the tools the way I want to handle it. And that feels so, when he says that, it feels like, wow, this is cool. I can do whatever, you know, the body, the mind, it's just completely free, right? And that, I think, Srini, is what you mean when you had the tears, right? Absolutely nothing. There was no body. There was no mind. It was just pure bliss, right? That's, yes. I think it like we all go through that at some moments. Maybe we're not there permanently, which is what Rick is talking about. But it is there. It is always there, right?
Right. Good, good. Like you said, tools. we have quality tools. I've been a quality person all along. So now you are referring to spiritual tools. I think we can use the spirituality tools, you know, to get further. Good.
Should we conclude? Raj, you have any other point?
No. Sorry, I should lower my hand. Yeah.
Okay. It's 8:05. Yeah. So should we say the prayers? Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah.
Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinah, Sarve Santu Niramaya, Sarve Bhadrani Pashyantu, Ma Kaschid Dukkha Vagbhavet, Asatoma Sadghamaya, Tamasoma Jyotirgamaya, Mrityorma Amritam Gamaya. Om Shanti 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 Hi Om. Hari Om. Thank you.
Hari Om. Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.